Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Red Couch Theology Podcast. Hey, this week we talk mostly about economics, and not even that spiritual of economics. We talked about fiat currency, and we talked about the gold standard, and we spent a decent chunk of time talking about cryptocurrency. Why did we do that? You're going to have to listen to find out. So let's dive in and figure out, why does economics affect and relate to the Bible? Today, I actually asked Alex if he was ready to go live, and he said yes.
Yes.
We're a little late today. None of you watched live, so it doesn't matter.
None of you watched live, so it doesn't matter.
Now, I'm going to go on there, and it's going to be like dozens of people watching live. I'm excited to see this. How many of you out there? One.
Is that us?
I don't think it is.
Unbelievable. Hello.
Hi,
hello,
you.
Dear friend.
Hi, you out you there watching.
It's my wife.
Probably. There you go.
She wants to check where I am and if I'm okay.
Yeah. We're starting slow here because we're just... Normally, we're in here chatting for like 5 to 10 minutes before the show.
Yes, I dashed in.
But both of us are kind of running a little late today.
Yeah. How you doing?
I'm good.
Yeah, I like the polo shirt look you're bringing today.
Yeah? Do you?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Way to go.
Good.
Way to be.
I'll have to get some more polo shirts because it's really important for me to impress you with my fashion.
Well, quite. Yes. We both got to do a doubt tonight last night.
We did.
I said, I text a friend who I used to do student min with, and I said to her, I'm going to talk to students. And she said, oh, it's good to get back to your roots. Like, to reach back was the term she used. And I said, yeah, the problem is I feel like the reach is a little further every time.
I don't know, man. I think it felt like it was seeing you in a unique element that you have, you know?
Oh, man.
It's
just
capacity,
like so. Trying to figure out things you don't know anymore. Is just fascinating.
What do you mean you don't know anymore?
Well, just like to some degree, people don't change, but generations change.
Yeah.
So you realize like there's just whole different ways of operating that you're seeing in a
group. Did you feel that when you started to use Back to the Future as an illustration, they're giving you blank stares?
No, actually, that one most of them had seen. I was so relieved. But
Oh, it was the Monty Python joke.
Oh, well, that I knew was nobody was going to...
There was one person that raised their hand.
Yeah, I was like...
I'm with you!
Totally, and that's like, what I was looking for.
You're like, did he... No, nothing?
Nothing,
all right,
nothing.
That's funny.
But you just realize, like, they... Even if it's just little things, like when I was working with students, Instagram was the thing.
Yeah.
But that's what everyone was on. And now you're like, is that still the case? Like, I don't know anymore. Like, I've lost touch with that. It could be something else now. Like... The phrases change.
TikTok, man.
So I, when I was in the student world, I used to feel like I could at least understand students and how they talked and what they were into, even if I didn't agree. Now I'm just like, I feel like I'm miles away.
Yeah. So it was fun, though.
And then, of course, then you have the weird thing of like my daughter was there. So then you're suddenly in that space of like, huh?
Well, I had two of them there.
Yeah, you had two of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who are two very different.
So my daughter came up to me afterwards. She's like, did you know which question was mine? And I was like, no, which one? And it was like one of the hard, heavy hitting questions
good
about
for
genocide.
Her.
And I was like, are you trying to make this hard on me? And she's like, yes. Like she just totally asked a hard question just to see your dad squirm.
I
you know,
love
it's like
it. Good for her.
It's awesome.
Good for her.
Maybe she actually had the question too, but I think she and I've already talked about the subject, so I think it was just to make me squirm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you? How are you doing other than Doubt Night?
I'm good. Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah. I'm
relatively
still trying to
good.
Arrive fully mentally in the room. If I'm honest. Which is not good for this show
actually,
because we usually do that live in front of everyone anyway, and now we're both like starting 10 minutes later. So,
I actually am feeling wonderful because I went for a massage yesterday.
Yeah,
I said to my chiropractor, I was having trouble with my neck. I said, "What did you think of massage?" He said, "You should go do that." So I did, and I fell asleep.
I could never.
I literally fell asleep.
Wow.
Yeah, I just was like, I was so relaxed. I was just like, okay, I'm just going to fall asleep here.
That's amazing. I couldn't convince myself to fall asleep.
Yeah.
Or let myself. I just...
Yeah, I know. I just completely, like not pure sleep, but like airplane sleep. If you've ever slept on an airplane, like that sleep where you kind of like feel like you're asleep, but also, am I asleep? I don't know. It's like, it's... Yeah.
Halfway in between.
Anyway, so I actually feel like I got
they
up off the table. I was
gentle.
Like, oh my goodness, I feel like a different human being. Oh no, it was not like the point I fell asleep, it must have been. But at one point, like they dug their elbow into, I have all these knots in my back, which is a big part of the reason I went. They dug their elbow into the, and I was like, ah! just like full scream mode.
Yeah. Do you carry your stress in your shoulders?
Very much so. I don't feel like I used to.
I don't.
But now I'm like, nah.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, maybe underneath my shoulder blades, but not.
I didn't used to feel any stress. This job has made me stressed.
Which is hysterical since you look so laid back all the time.
That's what everyone says.
<It's> like,
everything is awesome. Ah!
Like inside
I'm just dying. It's like, yeah.
Huh.
I think I should share with these guys the sort of dream daydream that Andrea had about our little lead team of people, because I'm an Enneagram 7. I'm the fluffy and friendly one of the group, in case you didn't pick that up. And I get to do a lot of work with Aaron and with Andrea and with Steve. And theoretically, now they're all Enneagram 8s, which is very different to 7s, the mean ones. And she had this kind of like this like short dream of like me as Roadrunner in the middle of three coyotes, which will stick with me forever.
Yeah. And I told him that's actually beautiful because Roadrunner always wins
against three coyotes.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you kidding me? Has he ever even been close? Like the times that he thinks he gets Roadrunner, it's like even more comically
painful for him. Well anyway, I I'm the Roadrunner, you are the coyotes, and that just is joyful to me.
Is it
so? So what are we talking about today? Not about Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote.
No, we're talking about Sunday. Confused because we've recorded two. It was the Sunday on that I preached.
And of course, that always flips the dynamic here because you're a great question asker. And I can make up answers to questions on the spot.
This is how the show works.
Whereas now we have to flip that dynamic and I have to become a good question asker.
Yeah, do you remember what I preached on? Because you weren't even here.
I wasn't even here.
Did you happen to be able
so,
to?
So here's the question we usually ask.
Yeah.
So what did you say?
That's the wrong text. I was like, so when you fast, no. we recorded two shows this week. And so my brain's a little bit, that's all it takes to cripple me.
Absolutely.
Record two shows is max capacity for my brain. So we talked about this passage that, says, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moths and vermin destroy and thieves break in and steal, but instead
they had vermin back in Jesus' day.
Indeed. Which I talked about vermin quite a bit in the sermon. And then instead we're supposed to store up their treasures in heaven. And so the Cliff Notes idea is that, one, shocker, all of the parts come together from previous sections of the chapter to this section to the section that comes this coming week. And so I think that this is both functioning as a conclusion and an introduction to a section within the chapter, chapter six. So verse one in chapter six, he says, there's two ways you can approach doing good things. Mm-hmm. You can do them to get rewards from people, or you can do them to get rewards from your Father in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
I recommend you do them to, you know, get your rewards from your Father in heaven. And then he gives the three illustrations, giving, prayer, fasting. We already covered that in different episodes over the last several months. And then here he concludes that by saying, hey, by the way, just as a reminder where we've been, let's store up treasures in heaven, not on earth. right? So it's a conclusion. But it's also, in my opinion, it's also where he starts to introduce kingdom economics. Mm-hmm. So I talked about economics a little bit. I talked about fiat currency and cryptocurrency.
Yeah, I loved that. Yeah, that
cryptocurrency. I talked about sort of the precarious nature of, like, we think if we have a lot of money, we're safe.
Yes.
And this text says that's not the case. And so one of the things I was just pointing out is how we can try and be as wise as we can, and we still can't. Well, notoriously, one of the things that I think even someone that I know who's relatively wealthy told me, one of the things that annoys wealthy people, maybe you actually, you're not relatively wealthy, but
no, I'm not.
But you know several people who are, who said they hate it, that they can't control the weather.
Yes.
So they move to places with better weather because it feels like at least they're trying to control the weather.
Yes.
It's one of the few things they just, it doesn't matter how much money you have, you can't.
Everyone has the same weather.
Control the weather.
Yeah.
And so, like, a lot of money is an attempt by many, or the thoughts about money is an attempt for us to control the world around us and to provide for our own needs, to provide safety and comfort. And so I talked about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Anyway.
Yeah. So I love that you pointed out, I guess maybe the elephant in the room around this text is that this is what humans do.
Yes.
They just instinctively store stuff.
Yep.
They gather and they hold.
Yeah. And actually, I would say that this text isn't even anti-gathering. It just wants to make sure that your investments are placed in wise investments.
Mm.
And then the irony, the big twist that freaks us out is that he says invest in heavenly things rather than in earthly things. And I also messed maybe with a few people's perspective of heaven. There is... So I've had people ask me a little bit about that.
Messed with a whole bunch of people's stuff.
Yeah.
About lots of things.
Yeah.
Vermin as well.
Vermin. Yeah. So vermin, the old NIV says rust.
Ah, yes.
The new NIV says vermin. So I joked about, like, that's weird. It feels like we're going backwards. But yeah. I think the reason the NIV translators in the new version said vermin is because it forces you to sort of explore it a little bit more.
Yeah.
Like, if you say rust, you just assume it means rust.
Yes.
But it actually just means consuming thing. Things that, a decaying agent.
Wow.
And if your valuables are wheat and grain or something like that in super ancient times, then it would have been vermin in the sense of, like, little creatures that come in and eat your possessions.
Have you ever seen I think it's Pablo Escobar? The guy that was a drug dealer in the Sinaloa cartel, I think he was in Colombia.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he reportedly lost millions of dollars a year to rats eating the money. Like, they just had so much cash that rats would just, they'd just devastate it. But he had billions, so he didn't even care.
That's crazy.
But yeah, I mean, like, it actually happens.
Yeah. So, but as currency came into being, metal currency, specifically coin, then vermin was a wide enough word in the Greek to account for rust.
Mm-hmm.
Rust is the eating agent that would consume that particular kind. And so you'd imagine, like, a super, super wealthy person in Jesus's day may actually literally have piles of metal coin and it would rust.
Huh.
And so, like, even if they were, like...
Which is interesting, because gold doesn't rust, does it?
Well, there was other metals and stuff like that as being used. Not all of it was gold.
Huh.
So,
interesting.
Anyway, so then it's basically, like, so the modern equivalents would be inflation, entropy. Like, so the things that we trust in to give us safety, security, and provide for our hierarchy of needs... It decays. It's precarious. It has, someone could come in and steal it, whatever, and on and on and on. So it's a very precarious investment. And Jesus is like, no, I really want you to be really good investors.
Mm.
And I think that we over-spiritualize that sometimes. And he's like, no, I think that if you actually invest in the kingdom of God, you're investing in a sure thing because it's backed by the King of Kings.
Mm.
This is what I talked about.
I love it. And I love that you took the time to talk about yeah, fiat currency and Bitcoin, and what a delightful aside, but also not really an aside. And actually, it's like a problematic thing because people do. You're right. People do think it's secure, don't they? You know, yeah. One of the questions people always ask me about, my wife actually, I think, also our one listener, also asks me about, always asks me about Bitcoin. He's like, why is it worth anything? And then you're like, but why is the paper in your hand worth anything? Because someone says it's worth something and other people want it and treat it as having similar value.
Yeah. So all of our, the thing that we're trusting in is a thing that a whole bunch of people say is worth something.
Yes.
That's
yes.
what we're leaning our,
yeah.
our, we're staking our lives on that that's going to be good enough. Mm-hmm. And then all you need is for a, you know, some stupid government decision or some, a thief or a hacker or whatever to come and screw up the system. Mm-hmm. And then boom, the thing you were trusting in falls apart.
I love it.
And so I think one of the things Jesus is recommending is like, it's not that amassing some wealth is a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually that what, where your heart is, he says in verse 21, you know, if I throw it on the screen here, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. He's basically saying, don't trust in those things. Instead, trust in the kingdom of God and its success,
mm-hmm.
because that has a much more reputable backer.
Yeah.
The one who owns the entire cosmos mm-hmm. and created it out of mm-hmm. nothing. He has plenty of resources to back up
yes.
his word.
Yeah.
And so invest there and your heart there. And so if you lose all your earthly possessions, you, no one can touch that investment.
Yes.
Because your heart's invested
yeah.
there.
Yeah. So a couple of questions that come to mind for me to ask you this time is, you're a big idea person. You love big ideas. You love people to go away with like this. Like, what do you feel like that was?
Yeah.
And then also second question, this verse feels like it's a verse that it's a problem verse. Like it feels like it's a verse that gets to people, like it gets under their skin.
Yeah.
What, unpack a little bit more what you think it is that gets to people about this.
So first part, the big idea that I chose, whether people picked up on it or not, is bank on the king and the kingdom rather than the bank and the banker.
I love it.
And so, yeah, I could go into some deeper dives on economics a little bit mm-hmm. to like explain why I think there's a couple extra subtle multi meanings to
that.
This.
Yeah.
So, I spent a couple minutes talking about currencies,
mm-hmm.
but the thing that backs your, there's something that will back up a currency
mm-hmm.
to give it, to state its value. Someone comes along and states its value, like over time that becomes more and more solidified. So like with gold, it just became, it was a rare asset. People liked its beauty
mm-hmm.
and saw some utility with it, not rusting and various different things like this. And they just, and over time it was more of like an organic
yeah.
communal backing
yes.
of gold. And then it became like the main backing agent for
yeah.
currency for a lot of years.
And it could easily have been something else.
Yes.
Theoretically.
It could have been. And for some reason, human beings decided that gold was a valuable asset.
Hmm.
And so it backed the US dollar for years. And then in 1973, actually because the US government was doing so well and it was starting to become like a major, or it was increasingly a major player, our gold stores were just getting depleted because other countries were like buying into U.S. economy and various things. We just didn't have enough stores to continue to engage with global economics.
Wait, because the more gold was coming here, they weren't getting, like the space was depleted.
No, not the space, but just like we couldn't continue to lend and or borrow in line with the actual gold
wow.
supply in the marketplace. Huh. And so if we wanted to spend beyond the gold supply for various reasons, you know, again, I'm not an economist, but there wasn't enough gold supply in circulation
uh-huh.
to back all of the different transactions that people wanted to make given the economic environment at the time.
Mm.
And so those pressures to spend beyond the backing came in, and we broke ties with the gold standard.
Okay. And that you hear people talk about that. Like, the gold standard. Like, we should go back to the gold standard.
Yeah.
But they're actually just going back to another man-made system.
Yes. It's still, the gold standard was just an agreed upon thing that we like this thing.
Yeah.
We really like it.
And it could
it
could have been the, I know, the titanium standard or the palladium standard.
Exactly.
Or whatever.
Yeah. So the point, though, behind all of that economics, and I don't know if this came across in my message because I went through it rather efficiently. Those who understand it, some of this might have caught it. Other folks who aren't interested in any of the economics or the financial world of that in that level, they may have been like, that was weird. He talked about economics. They may not have tracked with it. I don't know. But there's a backer. In theory, gold is the backer, mm-hmm. and then the thing that backs up gold is the agreed upon, mm-hmm. the social agreed upon value that humans mm-hmm. have on gold. And then now, the backer for fiat currency, fiat just means that it's not backed by mm-hmm. gold, essentially. It's actually backed by government
and
promises.
And fiat make cars that are really bad, so it always makes me think the fiat system is bad.
Well, it's the government, the United States government backs and says, We're willing to, with our word, mm-hmm. say that this is valuable.
Wait, this is the government that has like $25 trillion of debt.
Yes.
Okay.
Thus the concern of various folks. But they say the government backs the currency and says, you know, we're the biggest, strongest mm-hmm. Country economically. And so we promise it's valuable.
But every country does that.
Yes.
Yeah.
But all the other countries measure their currency on the dollar.
It wasn't always that way, you know.
I know.
But do you remember what they used to do? Measure it on?
Yeah, the pound.
Did they really change that? I feel like it's still the pound, really.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, the pound's worth more than a dollar.
Fair enough.
It's like £1 to $1.30. Like, you measure it by the currency that's like the best, right?
Sure.
Sure. Sure. Classic American answer.
If you look at how the actual economics work globally, that's just not the case. But, which is why actually there's strange conversations.
Don't point me to something I can't see right now and just ask me to believe it.
So one of the concerns that's happening is the United States' credit is starting to be reduced.
Wow.
Like our credit score, uh-huh. our country's credit score is being reduced, and there's other nations on the rise economically. And smaller countries are saying, well, maybe we're going to go to the yen as our primary preferred currency.
But I thought China was a mess. Is that not what we've been
told? No, I'm just saying examples.
Okay, like, it could be the yen, could be the...
Yeah, it could be a
couple... probably the Swiss franc. That's like their rock solid.
Yeah, so the point is the main reason our currency has held up so well mm-hmm. to inflation is because we've been the biggest, baddest in town, in theory. But that's just... us saying that we are. This is all a very precarious system, right? Now, that's a very...
If you're about to, you know, not jump off a cliff, but if you're about to, like, I don't know, go bury your head in the sand or something,
you've
then
tuned out completely. Like, no, why are we talking about economics? So the point is you have to have some reputable something to state...
yes.
the value in order for you to actually trust its value.
Yes.
And we have agreed upon, and the dollar has been a relatively powerful, actually the most powerful currency in circulation in recent 100 years mm-hmm. time frames. And so therefore we trust it pretty well. Meanwhile, it doesn't keep up with inflation, but that's a whole nother conversation.
Yes.
So, and then now there's this huge wave. Well, not even that huge yet. But there's this wave of cryptocurrency enthusiasts. And one of the reasons cryptocurrency is on the rise, if you've never studied cryptocurrency, is because it's not as touchable by the government.
Uh-huh.
And it's not these other entities that we may or may not
trust.
So
is it more like the gold standard in that sense?
Yes, at least some cryptocurrencies, like Bitcoin, for example.
Which is the only one that actually matters.
Bitcoin has a limited number uh-huh. of coins possible written yes. into the algorithm.
Yeah.
And so therefore, it can't be inflated.
Uh-huh.
Whereas other cryptocurrencies don't. Other cryptocurrencies, they continue to issue more currency into the system.
Yes.
Therefore, they're still inflationary currencies. So
So,
we probably lost everyone.
I don't know if we did.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know. To me, it's all fun. And I think if we just call this episode The Economics of the Kingdom, some people will look for it and find it because we talked about Bitcoin. So let's just put #Bitcoin.
#Bitcoin.
In the thing.
And all these Bitcoiners are like, what the heck am I listening to right now?
These two don't even know what they're talking about.
Yeah. Like, so, but that's the power. That's the power. And that's the argument of Bitcoiners is that it's non-inflationary.
Yeah.
No one can inject more.
And even with gold.
Well, actually, gold is semi-inflationary because they still mine it.
Yeah, and it could just be like suddenly we found out the whole of the UK is just buried. It's like
sitting
gold.
On gold.
Just all gold.
So it's a finite-ish resource. Uh-huh,
yeah.
But Bitcoin is like locked in.
Yes.
We actually know how many coins are possible to exist. 21 uh-huh. million coins is the max that will ever exist. And several of them we know have been already lost.
Yes.
Forever. So there might be 18 million coins.
I'm actually going to talk about that this week.
Ever. Anyway, great. Well, I'll stop there so we can talk about it more.
But I think what you're saying really is that all the systems we think we can rely on are actually not as reliable as we think. And if you ever feel about an economic system, oh, people just said that's got value and that's all that it's like relying on. Well, that's every economic system ever.
Yeah. So I built up Bitcoin for a second. Let me tear it down.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Can I sell mine first before you do?
Yeah. I'm going to move the market right now. I'm really going to move
this. One person could be really influential.
I listened to this podcast and Bitcoin plummeted. Yeah, right. So the big critique of Bitcoin is it's even less substantive.
Mm.
So it makes it even more obvious that it's just an agreed upon value.
Yeah.
Humans like it.
Yeah.
We think it's awesome.
Yes.
It isn't a thing. Well, there is some, you can make an argument that it has some substantive value because of essentially the energy it requires to produce, but that's getting way too in the weeds.
But what you can actually hold in your hand is even less than the paper.
Yeah, it feels even less.
And even then, that was less than the gold.
It's digital. It's digital. A digital asset.
Uh-huh.
And but it's just this agreed upon value, and so it feels precarious to some folks because all we would have to do is say, actually, this other cryptocurrency is more valuable, and suddenly the thing that we were staking our life on plummets in value and the other cryptocurrency rises.
And it's weird how things...
And there's actually evidence, there's cases you can make why Bitcoin isn't the strongest option and why other current cryptocurrencies, because they have more modern technology, better algorithms, whatever. And so it feels precarious also. And I get it. I actually invest in a little bit of cryptocurrency. I like cryptocurrency in various ways, but... Brass tacks is it's not as safe as we think it is because it's still human beings trying to create value out of something that we were never intended to. So the whole bottom line is the only one who can back currency is God.
Yeah.
Because he's the only one who owns it all.
Yes.
We're backing our currencies against things that we don't even own.
As an aside, it reminds me of if you ever saw the movie Ocean's 13. They have like the little Chinese guy that comes and does all the crazy, like he's the acrobat of the group, but they set him up as this high roller and he turns up in this big limousine and no one's ever heard of him. And Matt Damon's character says he owns all the air over Beijing. And like, what do you mean all the air? He's like, try this. Try building something over 20 stories in the Tianjin project. Province and see whether his name comes up then. But like, can you own air? Can you own Bitcoin? Can you own paper money? All those different things. They have no real basis. And even if they do, God owns everything.
Yeah. And theologically, we can't own anything. We're literally part of the thing that God created.
Yes.
And so he owns it all.
Yes.
And he kind of like with maybe a chuckle under his breath is like, yeah, you own a house.
So I mean,
I made it.
Yes.
All of the atoms and everything that it made up your entire body, I made. So yeah, but sure, you can own it. Yeah.
I actually talked about that maybe a year ago. I don't know if you remember. I talked about who owns New York City.
Yeah.
Because it's like got all these historic like things. And yet, beautifully, God says that the whole world is mine. The earth is the Lord's and everything in it is the beautiful declaration of Psalms.
Yes.
And so we're looking to invest in something that has more permanence, even if that doesn't feel true in some ways because of our upbringing, because of what we've been told.
Yes. And because of fear.
Mm.
Like, it feels, it's weird. It is the most stable investment that you can make because it has eternal implications. Mm. It's backed by the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, who has demonstrated a character of love that is so vast that he's willing to die for his own enemies. Mm. So it's a very secure actual financial investment to invest in his kingdom. And if someone breaks in and steals all of your money, they can't take your eternal treasure in relationship to God. And the fact that, like, all throughout the new heavens and new earth, you'll have access to every resource that God created. So on and on and on, why this is the best possible investment for your actual real money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what does that actually look like then? This text doesn't address that fully.
That's the hot part, isn't it? Yeah.
Your text starts to hint maybe a little bit into it, but it does mean that you should give to kingdom activities. You should actually be generous with your real finances. But the point is, your heart is banking on the kingdom's success, and therefore your actual who you donate money to will follow some of those things. But it doesn't mean that you just give it all away necessarily. And that's where's the tension of this text, which is the second part of your question, which is like, why is this tension create tension? It's because we're so emotionally tied to taking care of ourselves.
And this has kind of been, and I think you alluded to this right at the start, the whole Sermon on the Mount has been nudging us on some of these things all the way through, right? Like, the implication we carry is that this world is the real thing, and the invisible God's kingdom world is less real. That's actually very ingrained in us.
Yeah.
And Jesus is constantly reminding us, no, that's the really real thing. More real than this thing, even if this thing is real. Like, he starts to push on some of those, like, ways that, like, we think actually the rich are blessed. We actually think that's true because we see it all the time. I was just in Vail wandering around, like, areas with multi-million dollar houses. It's very hard for me to shake the idea that these are the blessed people.
Mm-hmm.
And yet Jesus says, no, equally blessed of the poor. It messes with our minds because we're like, how can that be true? And there's other places where Jesus starts to say things that we don't think are really real. No, they actually are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, fasting in the spiritual realm, we talked about it the other day, is actually doing something that's really real, and we don't necessarily feel that. We actually don't think God's kingdom matters as much as the stuff that we can touch and feel.
Yeah, and ironically, the other reason we don't trust the investment in the kingdom things oftentimes is because the world is broken enough that our experience is, if I have more financial resources at my fingertips, then I can take care of myself, which you may have evidence that that's been the case in various different times. But we don't get to experience a world that actually walks in the way of Jesus and holds all possessions open-handedly to one another. And so we don't, because we don't experience that kind of open-handedness as human beings very often, it's hard for us to trust each other to be generous with each other. Like, if I were to be in deep need, I have to sort of beg and plead and borrow and steal and all to take care of myself. Whereas in the kingdom economics, in the new heavens and new earth, everyone will have access to all of God's world and hold it all open-handedly. There will be no one with need like we see today, because God's world is so prolific that it has abundance of resources to care for everyone.
Mm.
And we actually know that. We just hoard it all for, like, some people hoard it all to try and prevent them and theirs from ever having any risk. But if we were to just stop hoarding, there's overabundance.
That isn't that incredible? And we've been told that for decades now, and it's still so hard to live that way.
So the problem is this stinginess. Mm-hmm. And the solution is to let go, weirdly.
Yes.
But we don't, we're like, well, you let go first, uh-huh, and then I'll let go. And it does, I get it. It feels precarious because we see how horrible we can be as humans.
So it's like, I mean, to give like the redux like version of it, it's like there's a table and there's a pie in the middle of the table. And if everyone just takes a slice, there's plenty. But we're already seeing people take like a quarter of it.
Yeah.
And so our fear mentality builds of like
all of it. And then the rest of us have a few crumbs.
Yeah. So we're like, well, I'm not giving up my crumbs because already the scarcity mindset, because we just saw Zuckerberg take like, I don't know, three pieces. And we saw Elon Musk take another six that might reduce down to one, depending on how the stock valuation changes. Yeah. But there is that, like we look around, it's the keeping up with the Joneses thing again.
Yeah.
It's like everyone's grabbing. I got to grab too.
Yeah. And the kingdom economics is to say, know what? I'm going to give up my crumb, banking on the fact that there's 10 pies in the kitchen.
Yes.
And by trusting God's system, I have more than I could possibly ever eat.
So I think I might
die and experience that in all of eternity, the new heavens and new earth. But I'm still going to bank on that investment.
Yeah. So I think I told you the other day, some friends who come to South invited me to this North Face sale.
Yeah.
And we were all like lined up, like waiting to go. And I was kind of looking around at people. I'm like, how violent is this going to get? Like, it's like you're kind of trying to judge the social contract.
I bet
in the
I could
room.
Take that person.
Yeah, totally. Like, I bet I'm
fine. I gotta watch like, out
like,
for that guy.
I've got my foot on the line. I'm like, I can totally run. And I'm probably faster than like 80% of people at the front. And you can see we're all kind of like weighing each other up and evaluating like how brutal is this gonna get. And I'll say it was not some of the best of humanity's moments. Like, there's a lot of like grabbing, but not to the degree that I feared it. Because actually the starting point, like we all actually just walked down at a fairly brisk space.
It's one of those like, yeah, we're being cordial.
Yeah.
We're fine. It's okay.
Yeah.
Just
but it felt like it only needed one person to yell something like, you know, like free stuff, and it would have sent it into like manic.
We're right on the edge.
Yeah. And it feels like that. That's kind of the sort of thing we're talking about, really.
It's absolutely.
So what does one person do in the midst of that? Isn't that a hard thing? Like,
well,
it's hard to believe I matter.
That's why to your other question, this text is so much tension.
Mm.
We don't believe it.
Yeah.
We don't believe that kingdom economics works.
Mm. Yeah.
And then the next text, which you're going to talk about this week, starts to try and make some cases for why you should. And it's still going to be hard. Just spoiler alert, it's still going to be hard for us to believe that kingdom economics
works. Yeah, you promised
works.
I'd answer some questions.
Yeah, I created all sorts of problems.
And I'm a little terrified. Like, I'm still, like, it's Thursday now, and I'm like, I don't know if I've got anywhere close to answering any questions.
See, at first I was a little bit annoyed because I was like, well, all of the answers fall in Alex's text. And then as I studied it more, I was like, oh man, all I have to do is lay the gauntlet and then I get to pass the buck up the chain to Alex and he gets to do all the heavy lifting.
Oh yeah. I was actually getting coffee with a friend earlier and he was like, I would not want your job. I'm like, yeah, I know the feeling. Call it obedience.
Yeah. So that's why this text has so much tension. It's really, really hard. To actually believe that if I let go of all of my possessions, at least psychologically, completely stop trusting them and let go, that my Father will catch me. It's a trust fall. Mm. It's a cosmic trust fall with your entire life to lean on that.
So you want people to go back to in their memories to that moment where they did trust falls at school, where you just have to fall backwards without stepping backwards. You just have to let yourself go and believe that the other person will catch you.
Yeah, and now there's some cases that, like, there's some samples that we can give, and I think Alex has already talked about some stories with me that he might share this week of people who've done that, and God catches them and catches them and catches them and catches them. But then we have all these question marks. But I've also heard of stories where he didn't. But the thing that we're banking on for those stories where it doesn't appear like he catches them in this world is this eternal promise that, like Paul says, to live is Christ and to die is gain.
Yes. So, but another thing we don't believe.
Another thing we don't believe. And so, like, for Paul, he's like, he's in jail and he's contemplating being martyred. And he's like, well, which one do I want more? Like, I kind of would be awesome if I was martyred.
Take
because
me
God
to
is
the
so
block.
Yeah. He's like, yippity. Like, he's like excited.
Skipping his way down towards.
He's excited for martyrdom because he just is excited to enter into a fuller expression of existence with more reward and more resources than he could ever have imagined prior. And then he's like, yeah, but it probably won't happen because I still have a few things I want to, like, I think God wants me to accomplish here in this world. That's the cosmic trust fall, is that to trust that this eternally secure investment will pan out.
Yeah. So remember a few weeks ago you were preaching and you talked about how you thought that one verse was like, or two verses was like maybe the best verses in Scripture?
I do remember that.
Yeah. You actually accidentally said it was going to be the best sermon in history.
I know.
which was a wonderful moment.
These are the best yeah. two. This is the best sermon. I mean, verses.
Which it was a very good sermon. Like, I haven't read every sermon in history, so I don't get to judge. I think Charles Spurgeon had a couple that were pretty good as well.
Yeah, he was all right. He's all right.
That's all right. It feels like those two verses are very revealing. They're very central to what's going on between heaven and earth.
Yeah.
And I pointed up and then down, but really I just mean like somewhere there's this thing that's separate. It feels like these whole passages, this week's and next week's, all tie into that idea as well. When we're asked to pray, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven, goes back to that idea that there is this heavenly realm where things are as God wills them.
Yep.
And there's this earthly realm where they're not, and we're praying, let that heavenly thing become evident here.
Yeah.
Let it take shape here. It seems like now this is like hits us in the practical elements of that prayer. It pushes us to the point where we're super uncomfortable because now we're not just praying, let it be done.
It's not an intellectual exercise anymore.
No, we're saying, I, in the way that I live, I'm going to choose to live as though the way it is in heaven is the real way it should be. And the way in which it is on earth is not. I'm going to live now as though heaven has already come.
Yes.
That's really hard to do.
Yeah. Yeah, it absolutely is.
But
it's
really, actually,
really
as we'll see this week, is actually probably the solution to all of our angst and struggle.
Yeah.
And even when it doesn't work out, I'm going to use this quote this week just as a little spoiler. And I gave it to students last night when we were talking at the Doubt Night. And it's just one that's just resonated with me.
Yeah.
It's a Ronald Rollheiser one. And he says this, pray in such a way as that you maybe not today, but someday will hear the voice of God say, I love you. And by I love you, I'm stretching that to mean I care for you. I hold you in my arms and my hand. Pray in such a way as you may one day hear that. Until you hear it, nothing will ever be right. And once you've heard it, nothing will ever really be wrong.
Yes,
and it's
so
just
good.
Such a great quote. It's one of those ones
so
I wish
good.
I'd written that.
I know.
Because you do see that in people's lives, not experiencing the love of God. There's always something that's not quite right. And when you meet people that have truly engaged with that and truly heard the voice, the still voice calling us beloved, nothing with those people is ever really wrong. There's hardships, there's trouble, there's trials. But for those people, when the food doesn't feel like it's there, nothing is ever really wrong. When the executioner's block and axe are waiting outside the room, nothing is ever really wrong. When there's no car to drive, when there's nothing provided.
Yeah, you become invincible and steady and safe and secure.
Yeah.
And this is why Dallas Willard says, like, what we often don't realize is the world is a perfectly safe place to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we say that and you're like, no, that can't be right. Is it right?
Mm-hmm.
And according to Jesus and the way you see Jesus walking around in the Gospels, you're like, he believed that.
Mm-hmm.
He was not afraid. He was afraid of like individual moments and he was genuinely concerned about experiencing the pain of the cross and these sorts of things. But ultimately, the decisions he made vetted out the reality that deep down he believed in this spiritual dimension more than he believed in the earthly dimension, which is what that weird eyes section is actually about in the text that we studied on Sunday as well. So,
oh, man. Well, I'm more excited to preach this week.
There's a question that came in, too.
What was the question? I have no function over questions. This is the problem with this switch.
So can I ask myself a question?
No, I want to ask it. Where do I read? My question regards Aaron's sermon of March 17th, 2024. How does Proverbs chapter 6, verse 6 to 8 fit in with his sermon regarding money?
And there's Proverbs. Proverbs 6 says,
go to the ant, you sluggard, consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer or ruler, which we might question now because it feels like there's some kind of like drive from some central mind. I don't know. Maybe.
Okay.
Yet it stores its provisions in summer and it gathers its food at harvest.
I love how many times this podcast, you and I venture outside of our expertise. We've talked about economics and now you're talking about like ants and their hive mind. We're experts on all things.
Absolutely.
No. But to answer this question, like, I think what they're getting at is this text sure sounds like store up a whole bunch of stuff.
Mm.
And that this text is recommending that that's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Oh, let me put it on the screen for those who watch this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the ant stores its provision in summer and gathers its food in harvest. Like, this is a good thing. A wise thing to do is to store up some value. Yeah, yeah. Remember, I just said, at least in the podcast, I may not have been as clear on Sunday as I would have liked to be. I think I did put a slide up that says, this whole chapter has been about how do I get rewards and how do I invest
well. Yeah.
So the scripture, at least this text, is not against storing.
Mm-hmm.
It just wants you to store in the right place and in the right system.
And it's certainly not against hard work either. I think that's one of the fascinating things to me about Protestant Christians in the West's reading of grace and works.
Yeah.
And Dallas, again, like a good pal, he I think, nails that aspect when he says grace is not opposed to effort. It's opposed to earning.
Yes.
Like, there's nothing in scripture that says don't be a hard worker. It does talk about rest and recognizing your limitations, like knowing that the company may not need you to work 7 days a week, that it may continue to build, and that you might not be getting what you think you're getting. But actually, like, it fully advocates being a hard worker.
Yeah, absolutely. And so let's get real practical with this. Like, what does that mean? So don't store, but do store. Okay. And then practically speaking, what do you mean by invest in the kingdom?
Mm.
Like, what does that in my day-to-day life look like? It just means that all the money that happens to pass through your fingertips, metaphorically speaking, maybe it only is in your bank, but you're not actually moving physical bills around. But if you're saying my primary goal is to see the kingdom of God thrive and come, and God has kind of jokingly given me these resources, not jokingly, but like really, he's allowed me to steward and invest these resources for a short period of time to that end. and you're living your life and you're trying to make some good investments, and you save up some, and you maybe invest in in some in the stock market or whatever, and you give to your church or whatever. And then an opportunity comes across maybe you're an entrepreneur, an opportunity comes across your desk to make astronomically more than you're making now. But the business deal is a little bit shady, and you happen to know that there's like some sweatshop labor involved in this particular business deal. That's when the rubber meets the road, and you say, kingdom first, and the principles of love my neighbor as myself. That's what I mean by kingdom. All of this stuff first. So I could go in this, get filthy rich and give tons to the church, but I also know. And that's when you fall to your knees and you say, God, help me know how to, whether I engage in this. And I may turn down the business, biggest business deal of my lifetime because I know where that business deal goes and how it's detrimental to the kingdom of God.
And when you see people live those principles, like, it's pretty compelling.
Absolutely.
You know, I know a couple of guys just in relationship that have walked away from like deals of a lifetime, and they're like, yeah, I'm okay. Like, yeah, it wasn't right. I the way of Jesus was more important to me. And I think that's just fascinating. Like that way is compelling to other people, because we all really long to live free from the fear of not having enough.
Yeah.
But we're just so used to living that way now.
Yeah. Or it could show up in another way where you develop a decent amount of money or whatever, and then you have a business opportunity and you're going to have to travel a ton. And you say, I feel like my primary responsibilities as a human being is to develop deep, vibrant spiritual friendships within my church family and with my physical family and my kids. And I want to pour into their lives. I want them to know that I'm a present parent and that they are loved and they see the love of God through the way that I love them. No, I'm not going to do that business deal. And I could double my income by traveling. And like, these scenarios sound accessible because, like, oh yeah, those examples are great because they're already wealthy enough that they can make those decisions. What if I can't even pay my mortgage and that deal shows up on my desk? And then you have to say, again, fall to your knees and you say, God, is this a season thing? Are you inviting me? Is this a way that you're providing or not? But every single decision you make with your finances and your time and your energy is filtered through, is it kingdom advantageous or is it kingdom harmful? It's not about how much money you have. It's not about not investing. It's not about whether you have a savings account or don't have a savings account. It's about, where's your heart first?
Yes.
Heart is always kingdom first.
So again, a little spoiler for this week, and I think this was the heartbeat of what you said. One of the things I'll reiterate this week is, because the kingdom to us sounds, we've already said it sounds abstract, but it's also not personal. But in Jesus' language, the king is inseparable from his kingdom. Like, to see the kingdom come is to see the king come. Like, and so I think there's this beautiful, like, moment where you get to say, if I want to see the kingdom come in my own personal world, I'm going to keep growing my relationship with the king. And because it requires that ability to say, God, like, you know, how am I supposed to act here? You're in a difficult conversation. You get to pause for a moment and say, God, like, help me to honor you in this conversation. Like, how do you want me to be? You get offered a deal. Okay, God, like, what? Like, everything gets filtered through that lens of the kingdom and your relationship with the king. And that's what we'll see when we see Jesus walk into Jerusalem on what will be the worst week of his life.
Yeah.
Knowing that he's doing it for his king.
Yeah, I mean, like, full disclosure, I shared some vulnerability. This is one of the struggles for me. I trust my own capacity to work really, really hard and provide for my family too much. And it's steered me off the rails with when it comes to my trust in money and my possessions in many ways. And so in the 24/7 prayer practice that we've been doing as a church family, one of the things that I felt Jesus inviting me to pray is say, Aaron, let's talk about that. When you're praying in this season, I need you to talk to me about this.
I love it.
What's going on in your heart that you can't let go? And clearly the evidence is not looking good that you're the best at this. So I need you to let go of this. And so I've been praying about that in my 24/7 prayer slot is about how do I hold my hands more open-handedly? And it might mean that I'm going to have to say and take a leap and say, I do some side contract work and say, I'm going to set aside a contract because that is some dollar income to my family, but I'm going to trust that God can fill this gap that I don't think he can.
Wow.
Because I think my energy is being divided by this or that too much.
Man.
And that's a big, scary leap for me. So this is it hits me square between the eyes. Now, one more note that I dangled at the very end of the message, but I want to remind people here, and then we should probably cut it off because we've been going an hour. But this plural, there's two plurals and two singulars. This is do not store up for y'all's selves.
Mm-hmm.
Treasures on earth, and do instead store up for y'all selves treasures in heaven. That's a plural. And again, I think these two plurals are a nod to the fact that the crowd that's listening to Jesus speak this message is the crowd of people that he envisions becoming his community of kingdom, kingdom representatives, kingdom people, citizens of the kingdom of God. And so in the modern vernacular, this would be like the church.
I like family. That even less than the personal element.
and then he says, for where your treasure individual.
Uh-huh.
So the individual definitely spills into the plural. But here's the cool part. If a church family chooses to invest our resources in kingdom things, then we can start to be a little deposit of heaven on earth where we care for each other and we show, just like Acts chapter 4, where no one had need, and we start to be able to increase each other's faith that the kingdom things are actually more real than the earthly things. But it takes all of us kind of looking at each other and looking at the pie and saying, I'm going to take just my slice and the rest of it I'm going to hold open to the community. Ooh, that's so scary. But if we could do it, then our faith would grow. Actually, this kingdom economics thing works.
Mm.
We see it in a microcosm of a church family.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe the world around us would say, how are you guys doing that?
Mm.
You know how? We're not holding it all with tight grips instead of we're holding it open-handedly. So it's got corporate implications and individualistic implications all throughout. So pretty cool.
I love it. Well, on to next week. Last week of the Sermon on the Mount for a while.
For a little while, yeah.
If you are someone who's part of South and you want to sign up for 24/7 prayer, we're hoping to fill all of Holy Week. That would be a wonderful thing for you to do. There's plenty of spots open right now.
Yeah. I've been really enjoying it. I found myself like maybe like 4 or 5 times a week, I've been talking to a staff person and was like, oh, yeah, I was during my prayer time today. Mm. And I was like, wow, like this little 30 minutes twice a week that I've signed up for is like,
yeah,
it's driving decisions. It's all these things because I'm trying to be intentional to pray for my family and pray for South stuff during this time. And I was like, wow, this has been fun.
Yes.
Well, I highly recommend it.
And if you've missed a spot, feel gracious with yourself. I was signed up for this Sunday and forgot I was on vacation. So I definitely missed my Sunday spot this week. So
the rest of us need to fill in the gap. No.
If you are interested in liking or subscribing or any of those things, feel free to do that. Reviews are always delightful.
Indeed.
We can no longer review ourselves. So
the two reviews on there is no, just kidding. It really does help.
If you just take some time and go and review and say I like
it's
that
awesome.
Would be great.
All right,
see you guys.
All right,
bye.